Welcome back to this week's edition of the Midweek Reality Check with Michael Pinto, where I try to keep Wall Street and your money real.
Quick disclosure, this podcast is for informational purposes only. Nothing I say constitutes direct investment advice or recommendation to buy or sell any securities. It represents my personal views at the time of the recording, and markets may perform differently than I expect. All investment involves risk, including loss of principal. With that said, let's get into it. In the last week of Jerome Powell's disgusting tenure as chair of the Federal Reserve, he oversaw the printing of $20 billion worth of high-powered money. Yep. That's $20 billion in just one freaking week, handed over to banks, his buddies in the banking financial sector, for them to gamble on Wall Street, provide the liquidity needed for new loans, and to expand the broader money supply aggregates. And that makes $193 billion of new credit printed just since the end of quantitative tightening and the start of QE, which was December of last year. And that is after expanding the Fed's balance sheet by $2.3 trillion over the course of his eight-year reign of terror over the purchasing power of the U.S. dollar. Powell printed this massive amount of base money supply despite the fact that he missed his 2% inflation target to the upside for over 5 years. I mention this because the new Fed chair, Kevin Warsh, wants desperately to shrink the size of the Fed's balance sheet. He's purported to be the opposite of Jerome Powell. Jerome Powell was all for Wall Street. Warsh is all for Main Street. Warsh wants to balance the trenchant discrepancy, rebalance it, the trenchant discrepancy between Wall Street and Main Street. But regrettably, Warsh will face an uphill battle from the existing members of the FOMC who do not want to reduce the Fed's footprint in the economy and markets. For example, this is true, like everything I tell you, but it's unbelievable, so I have to say that. I have to preface this with that statement. Governor Chris Waller, a Fed governor, currently a voting member, said reducing reserves is, quote, massively inefficient and stupid, close quote. He thinks reducing the size of the amount of excess reserves and the amount of overstepping its bounds of the Federal Reserve, its footprint in society and destruction of the middle class and pricing out the middle class from buying a house, or pretty much anybody from a first-time home buyer has been priced out, and keeping bubbles afloat and building bubbles in credit and stocks and in real estate. He thinks it's stupid to reduce the reserves. Stupid. Anyway, so perhaps it's going to be more of the same despite the efforts of Warsh. It's going to be more expanding the money supply for the purpose of, this is really, really antithetical, but try to grasp this. Expanding the money supply to help out the consumer who's getting crushed by inflation. So printing money to help out the consumer who's getting crushed by inflation. This is what Arthur Burns did in the 1970s. That didn't work out too well for anybody. Burns served as Fed chairman from February 1970 until the end of January 1978. He has a very well-earned reputation of having been overly influenced by political pressure. Sound familiar? In his monetary policy decisions during his time as chairman. In other words, printing money to please the prez. While Powell did balk at the exact number of rate cuts demanded by Trump at the end of his term, history will still record him as the greatest money printer who has ever led the Federal Reserve. After all, he turned out to be much more beholden to his investment banking friends on Wall Street than he was beholden to Trump. There are three scenarios for the war in Iran, turning quickly to the war in Iran here. The U.S. declares victory and leaves. That means the IRGC controls the flow of oil from the Strait. They will be charging tolls, and they will prohibit access to use the strait from, quote, enemy nations, unquote. In that case, oil stays near $100 a barrel if we just pack up and go home. And it stays there for a very long time. The IRGC strengthens in power and influence, and it can facilitate their quest for a nuclear weapon and a delivery system. So forget about that scenario. That's not going to happen. Scenario two, the status quo remains in place and oil prices continue to climb. The U.S. blocks the strait, Iran blocks the strait, and oil gradually climbs towards $120 per barrel, maybe even higher. That doesn't really sound logical, too, either. Scenario three, this is the one I'm thinking of. Despite all the rally today and the rumors of another deal, let's just see what happens. But scenario three is where I think we're heading. The U.S. moves troops into the west coast of Iran and occupies the strait. Force the strait open and stay there for a very long time. Not weeks, not months, years. Oil prices surge short term, but then collapse after the strait is secured. The war in Iran is causing energy prices to surge, which is pervading across many other sectors of the economy and infecting the globe with stagflation. This stagflation is bleeding into the fixed income sector now, causing bond yields to surge across the globe. That is finally starting to push asset prices lower, or at least it's a credible threat for asset prices to go lower. Even AI, this economy is predicated on AI spending and the top 20%, the high income earners, doing very, very well because of the wealth effect. Those are the two things that are working in this economy and markets. It's AI spending driving GDP growth, and it's consumption from the top 20% that's driving GDP growth, which is also helping out the stock market. After all, AI spending now relies on issuing debt, not cash flow. And borrowing costs are surging. That means less CapEx spending and puts the AI bubble in danger. That could torpedo GDP growth, torpedo the stock market, kill the wealth effect, and then we're in trouble. So, not happening yet. My eyes are fully focused on it. The truth is, stagflations always lead to recessions and depressions. I am extremely focused on what the Fed's balance sheet does under Kevin Warsh. If he were to end QE, it could expedite the delayed and cathartic recession depression. Very healthy one. It's what we need to happen. If, on the other hand, he continues with QE, currently at a $40 billion per month pace, expect stagflation to intensify and for it to eventually lead to that recession depression anyway, but only from a much more inflated level. There's no avoiding this reconciliation. Nature hates vacuums. This one will reconcile itself, believe me. So again, I'm myopically focused on what Warsh's Fed does with the balance sheet right out of the gate. Will he be able to stop the massive QE program going on right now? I won't know the answer to that question until tomorrow when they release the H.4.1. The truth is, without perpetual QE, this market is in big trouble. Inflation has become a global issue. It's a global problem. It's not just the United States. And so are fiscal debt bombs throughout the world. There's fiscal imbalances, too much debt, especially in the developed world. It's pervaded across the globe. Japan has it, Europe has it, the United States has it, China has it, all in the same boat. Inflation caused by the war, surging energy prices, and insolvency. So rising rates are going to become a headwind for asset prices. Determining when is the key. We are maintaining our stagflationary positioning with commodities, precious metals, energy, and agriculture. We also own utilities, aerospace, and defense stocks as well. We are avoiding any long duration holdings. No long-term bonds are held in our portfolio. We only own the short end of the Treasury yield curve. We own zero shorts right now, but we're waiting patiently for our opportunity to do so. Inflation is a very difficult macroeconomic condition to short stocks in. But because stocks are priced in dollars and the dollar's value goes down in stagflations, stock prices tend to go up. Not all of them. Utilities do well, base metals, energy, precious metals, but stay short those high beta sectors. It is much easier to short deflations, recessions, and credit crunches and depressions, all of which the U.S. has a rendezvous with in due course. And when it happens, we will be on top of it.
Thank you so much for listening to this edition of The Reality Check, 5 minutes of sanity in an insane world. Please remember, if you're not already an investor with PPS, you can email me directly using mpento@pentoport.com or call the office using 732-772-9500 to get information about our portfolio services. You should also go to Amazon and order my book, The Coming Bond Market Collapse. Subscribers should contact an investment advisor before acting on any information contained in this podcast. No information on this podcast constitutes an offer to sell or buy any financial instruments or to provide any investment services. Subscribers understand there's an inherent risk in investing. PPS is a registered investment advisor.